comments are welcome at 617-931-1090. And now back to the In Unison program. Here's your host, Paula Robinson.
Welcome back. You're listening to 1090 WILD, Boston's Urban Vibe. For the second half of the show, we're introducing Black History Month with Professor Henry Louis Gates, who made himself available from Harvard University. And for those of you who don't know, there's a very exciting project that Dr. Gates has been working on with Microsoft and Carta. It's a comprehensive encyclopedia of Black history and culture on two CD ROMs. Dr. Gates, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you. So tell me, now, this comprehensive history is huge. This is a huge project you've been working on.
It's the history of the whole Black world, really, from Lucy, our oldest common human ancestor in 4 million B.C., down to last summer, to Bill Clinton's visit to Ghana. It's about Africa and African civilizations, African people, African Americans in North America, and African Americans in, as it were, in the Caribbean and in South America. It also includes the presence of Black people in Europe, the Middle East, even as far east as China. It's a friend of mine calls it Planet Africa, and that's a great nickname for it. In fact, you know, I wanted to tell you, if any of the listeners are on the internet, they can look up our website at www.africana.com, and we have parts of the encyclopedia there, and people can view it and play with it for themselves. It's an interactive website, and it's a lot of fun. But, you know, the idea for this came not from me or my colleague Anthony Appiah, but from the great Black intellectual W.E.B. Du Bois in 1909. He thought that racism was caused by ignorance, and what the race needed was to combat that ignorance by producing a Black encyclopedia, sort of an equivalent of a Black Encyclopedia Britannica. And he called it the Encyclopedia Africana. And he pursued this idea his whole life, from 1909 until the day he died in 1963. He even ended up in Ghana, where he was invited by the president of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah, to locate the encyclopedia and edit it. But by the end of his life, he had narrowed the focus down to an encyclopedia about Africa only, and leaving out Black Americans. And, of course, what Anthony and I did was we went back to Du Bois's original 1909 idea to do an encyclopedia of the whole Black world, pan-African civilization. And that's what we did. And I'm really, really tickled with it. We had 400 scholars involved writing it, and we've done it with the Microsoft Corporation on CD-ROM, as you said, and a book will be published this fall. It's got 2.25 million words, 3,361 entries, and 3,000 pieces of media. You know, if you turn on the entry on Bessie Smith, for example, you actually see Bessie Smith singing. We have a film clip in there from 1929. We have 83 video film clips. You see Willie Mays making his famous catch in 1954 at the World Series. You see Joe Louis beating the daylights out of Max Schmeling in 1938. You even have Bill Bojangles Robinson tap dancing in there. It's Nelson Mandela the day he got out of prison, the children who integrated Little Rock in 1957, Central High School, the Watts riots, the L.A. riots. We have film footage on all that stuff. So it's a different kind of encyclopedia. It walks and talks.
That's excellent. And of course, I'm one of those people who have to see things to learn. But I'm curious, though.
Well, you're in business because you can see the whole Black tradition on the. You know, we even take you to Africa. We take you to Timbuktu to see the great library that Black men created between 1324 and 1591. We take you to Nubia to see the home of the Black pharaohs who ran Egypt. You know, we have everything in here, and it's smoking.
I've always been extremely curious because very much like your mentor, or if you will, was Du Bois. I've found a love in Sheikh Diop's work.
Oh, sure.
And one of the things that I'm curious about was, you know, with putting so much work onto two comprehensive CDs, how were you able to dissolve some of the arguments between what was actual, what credit should be given according to scientific research to...
Sure. Well, Any scholars faced with this question. What we did, we went very mainstream, of course, because we'd be blown out of the water. This is the first encyclopedia like this, and everybody would be looking to say, you know, what these Negroes do, and then they go crazy to the left or to the right. You know, we call it the Beethovenist Black School of Black History, right? You can't just make claims without evidence, as you well know. So what we did was to say, this issue is very vexed, you know, it's a good scholarly word, or very complicated or controversial. On the one hand, Sheikh Anta Diop thinks this, and on the other hand, you know, Mary Lefkowitz thinks that, and da-da-da, you know, and then we sort of come down in the middle. But the main thing, that the most important thing that we did was to represent as many different sides of the story as we possibly could, and as fully as we could. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And that's the best thing to do if you're a scholar, I think. At least, you know, other people would have interpreted different issues in different ways. You always have to make a judgment call.
Right.
But the main thing we wanted to do was to restore the truth of the past as the 400 scholars we had involved see it, and to represent as many different viewpoints as we could. So, you know, if you want to know about Malefia Santi, he's in there. You want to know about Afrocentricity, it's in there. The controversy over Egypt is in there. I mean, we take a stand. Egypt's definitely an African civilization. But on the other hand, we don't say that all Egyptians look like Michael Jordan, you know.
Right.
That Egypt was a mixed, they were mixed race people. But there was absolutely no doubt that the 25th dynasty, the pharaohs were all black. I mean, they painted themselves black as black could be. And, you know, this is something that the Nubian pharaohs, this is something that's been denied for centuries and centuries by European scholars.
But I think, wasn't there recently this admission with the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston about the pharaohs and the dynasties in Egypt?
We sponsored the conference of the World Nubian Association here in August. It has never met in the United States before. And scholars, hundreds and hundreds of scholars from all over the world came at the request of the Museum of Fine Arts and the Du Bois Institute at Harvard, which, as you know, I'm the director of. And we got Citibank to put up the money for that. And the whole point was to say, you know, Nubia was not some separate civilization from Egypt. They were fundamentally intertwined. There were direct flows of civilization from Nubia to Egypt, not just from Egypt to Nubia. You see, so many racist scholars have postulated that Egypt is separate from Africa, that it's closer to the Middle East, and, you know, we refute that idea in our encyclopedia. And we, and that all the great ideas came from basically white people, and then went filtering up the Nile River, you know, to Nubia, to the Sudan, and we take strong issue with that. You know, we're not as radical as the Afrocentrists would like us to be, or as radical as Sheikh Anta Diop. But we're very strong for Nubia and the black origins of Egyptian civilization. Oh, by the way, I made a film about that. I have a new film series that'll be on PBS in October.
So plug it.
Yeah, it's called The Wonders of the African World, and I went to 12 African countries with a film crew last year and made a 6-hour film series. And it'll be on, and it's about ancient African culture. And one of the episodes of the series, a whole hour, is about Nubia and Egypt. And, you know, I went over there to see for myself. So it was really, really exciting. I went to the tombs of the black pharaohs as well.
Well, you know, WILD is doing a piece on January 28th, where their 50th anniversary, this having a trip to Africa.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
When, in February?
Yes, it's February 28th.
Oh, great.
Yes, yes.
Are you going to Africa?
I want to go so badly, but I just don't have that kind of money this year.
Well, have you been?
I have not been. I've not been out of the country. I'm one of those, raised my children, but now it's next, I figure, year 2000 is time for me to start doing things.
It's time to go. You know, I used to be petrified of flying. I used to think, God, flying over all that water, man, that'd be bad news. But I've been to Africa. I've been to 19 countries in Africa. I've been blessed. I first went when I was 19. I was at Yale as an undergraduate, and they had a program that sent 12 kids to the third world, as they used to put it. And I went to Tanzania and lived in the bush for a year working in a mission hospital.
Wow.
And then I hitchhiked across the equator. I went from the Indian Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean by land, ending up in Du Bois's grave in Ghana. Du Bois is my hero. In fact, I have a photograph I took at the age of 19. I'm looking at it. I'm in my office at Harvard. And I keep this photograph of his original grave. He now has a huge mausoleum in Accra. What part of Africa you want to go to?
Well, I would like to see it all. I mean, as a matter of fact, that's my one. The one, if I see nothing else, that's the one place I wanted to see was just sort of all the different places in Africa, because I've recently read Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom, yeah. And I also read Du Bois's The Souls of Black Folks.
Oh,
but I'm really fascinated with the piece with Sheikh Diop, and I wanted to ask you why you felt he was radical. First, we have a caller on the line, who Alton from Dorchester.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Hi, welcome. Hey. Welcome to In Unison. Hey. You have a question or comment for?
Yes, I do. I do have a comment,
Dr.
actually,
Gase.
That I didn't agree with the part when the ideas were pretty much trickled down from the European into the African area. I think their extremes is one of materialistic versus spiritualistic, and most of the people, as I understood it, in the African origin were more of a spiritual type, where in the European was more of a materialistic type. But I can say you've answered a lot of my questions while I was listening, so I really appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
So what I will conclude saying is that one of the things I would like, in your book, does it also mention, I didn't hear you say it, but probably it did, but I'm sorry, in the CD, does it mention anything about all the black inventors?
Oh, yeah, we have these things called topic tricks.
So okay.
Let's say your children, let me finish.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let's say that you do you have children, by the way?
Yes,
okay.
One.
So let's say he or she said,
and I'm married.
Oh, great. That's good. Nice to have a black man staying home with his children and his family, I'll tell you
right.
that. But let's say your child comes to you and says, Daddy, were there any black scientists? You just get it out in Carta Africana, and you type in, you know, we have this word search thing that's fantastic. You type in scientists, and it gives you a list of every black scientist in the encyclopedia. We got articles on 24 people. I mean, we could have had, you know, 200, but maybe next time we'll have even more. But it'll tell you about the traffic light and, the, you know, all lots of people who invented things. In addition to, I mean, when I was in school, I'm 48 years old, we only learned about George Washington Carver, who was a great man. But there were a lot more black scientists. And we have a lot of, they're called topic tricks, so that you don't need to know what you're looking for. You can just, in effect, you're asking a question. Give me information about black scientists, and the encyclopedia gives you all that information. It's fantastic.
Good. And what I wanted to say before I hang up here is that one of the things that I wanted to make clear, I hope make clear to a lot of people who talk about the things that we didn't do in terms of we were slave and all of that, we have to understand that these black people did this in a point when slavery was at its height, and they really did not have any opportunities to do much of anything.
No.
Yet alone, a lot of the ideas was taken, and they were dehumanized as people, yet they was able to create ideas that none of the Europeans even thought of.
Sure.
And concluding, I would say, just think of how much more they would have created had they had not been slave and restricted.
Right, absolutely. Let me ask you something, brother. What's your name?
Alton.
Alton, if you had a choice, knowing what you know now, and if you could have stayed in Africa or come to the United States, which would you have done?
Well, knowing what I know now, I mean, being in the United, I would have stayed in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you why, and obviously we got to hang up here.
Mm-hmm.
Because being in the United States, being in this country does not make this country what it is other than the resources that is in this country. That's basically what is being sought, is the resource.
Right.
Resource can be done anywhere.
Right.
Look at China. They don't have to worry about what happens here. They got their own money, their own economy, their own resource.
Sure.
So that same principle can be applied to any country. It's a resource issue. Once that resource is there, I think the black people would have flourished much faster and much further, because there would not have been any restrictions to hold them back from their true identity and abilities.
I agree. I would have stayed in Africa. And if our people had not been dispersed in the diaspora caused by slavery, Africa would be much better off.
I know that. All the resources are there, the gold, the diamonds, the rubies, the emeralds, everything this country needs to survive on, most of it or a portion of it is imported from Africa.
Yeah, and I tell you something else that we do in this encyclopedia. I mean, we don't pull any punches. We talk about the African role in the slave trade, too. A lot of our people think that the Europeans, Europeans were dogs and devils, there's no question about that. But they were sold, by and large, by African middlemen.
Right.
So that the kingdom of the Ashanti, the kingdom of Dahomey, for example, grew rich by selling off other Africans to the Europeans. And it's one of the most horrendous scandals. Yeah. And also, the role of the Arab world was horrendous, just like the role of the European world. And we talk about all of them.
Yeah.
You know, we get down on everybody.
Yeah.
Because unless we admit the truth,
yep,
we can't have healing and forgiveness. And that's what we need. But I agree with you. If Africans hadn't sold their own brothers and sisters into slavery, Africa would be much better off.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And we'd be better off, too. But now we're here.
Right.
And so, you know, our people work so hard to build this sucker that the idea of giving it up to white people, to me, is ridiculous. I mean, we got to stake a claim on this. It's worth too much. It's too rich. You know, the country is rich precisely because black people have worked so hard in it for over 300 years. And for free. You know, that free slave labor. And we owe it to ourselves to stake a claim on the American system and to get our fair share. And that's what my colleagues and I at Harvard are working for.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay, brother.
You're a role model. I look up to you and all others who try to do what they can do to help give us a good name in society. Thank you very much. Take care.
Well, thank you. But, you know, the one thing I want the listeners to know is that all of us here, Cornel West, my dear, dear friend, and William Julius Wilson, Anthony Appiah, my fellow editor, Larry Bobo, Evelyn Brooks Higginbotham, the late Leon Higginbotham, Lord knows was an exemplar of this. We all stand on the shoulders of other great scholars who preceded us and who work in the academy today. And the only way that we can fight racism and progress as a people is if we work together.
Right. Thank you very much for calling, Alton. We're going to go to a commercial break and we'll be right back.
Contents of today's show do not necessarily reflect the views or opinion of WILD management or parent company and owner, Nash Communications.
WILD is celebrating its 50th anniversary in 1999, and we're kicking off the celebration with a Gateway to the Promised Land tour to Dakar, Senegal, in West Africa on February 23rd to March 3rd, 1999. That's 7 days and 6 nights. Round trip ticket on Air App Week from New York City to Dakar. Only 7 hours. Airport transfers, baggage, departure tax, first-class hotel accommodations, double occupancy at the Taranga Hotel, daily continental breakfast, welcome and farewell dinners, tour the city of Dakar and visit the spiritual Pink Lake and Slave Island Gori. All this for the unbelievable price of $1,299 plus tax. Limited seats available, so call now. Alkin Tours Incorporated.
Comprehensive Encyclopedia of Black History and Culture on CD in Carta, its version. And we have a caller on the line, Monique from West Medford. Do you have a question? We want to make it very brief. Oh, Monique is gone. Okay. Then let me ask you a question.
Sure.
We have a caller that did call in and ask whether there were Jewish people that owned ships involved in the transportation of slavery.
Oh, that's a good question, because it's something, of course, that the Muslims raised, the Nation of Islam, with their book, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, which I took a very strong stand against, because basically it said that the slave trade was controlled by Jewish people, which is, as Cornel West and me and John Hope Franklin and dozens of other black historians pointed out, that's just simply not true. I mean, there were a tiny number of slave owners who were Jewish, but there were more slave owners who were left-handed than there were slave owners who were Jewish. It's just not true. If it were, we would say it. This book depicted it, slavery as this giant Jewish conspiracy, but I said it was an anti-Semitic claim.
Okay.
It's not true.
We have only 10 minutes left for the show, so I want to move very quickly through about 3 or 4 more questions, okay?
Okay, good. But one thing I wanted to tell you, I hope you go to Ghana.
Really?
You know, when you said that you were going to go to Africa, now you can't see the whole continent at one time.
I know.
Because it's too big. But going to Ghana is a good place to start. And I'm saying this to all your listeners, too. Or Senegal, despite the fact they speak French, it's still very easy to get around as an American if you don't speak French. And that because in Ghana and in Senegal, it's easy to see the slave castles. And these are the places where Europeans constructed forts along the coast and then processed slaves. And it's heart-wrenching. The first time I went to Gore Island, that's G-O-R-E-E with an accent over the first E, which is just off the coast of Dakar in the capital of Senegal, I just broke down and cried. You know, you'd think, how in the world could I have ever survived this kind of brutal treatment? But, you know, on the other hand, somebody in our family in each of our families, for each black person in America who came here through slavery, which was all of us except, you know, those who came directly from Africa in the last few years, somebody in our families was strong enough to survive the dreaded Middle Passage, which is why we are a strong people. I mean, the African-American people are among the strongest people on the face of the earth because we have endured. We have not only survived, we have thrived. We have created a brilliant, beautiful culture, epitomized by blues and gospel, spirituals, jazz, rhythm and blues, our modes of dancing, our philosophy, our spirituality. We're a great people, and I think we're a great people because we survived the most horrendous system of slavery ever visited upon human beings. It was a nightmare when our people could be raped and brutalized by an owner. I mean, it was like having, we were like a piece of wood to them. They could just pick us up and throw us down and no one could punish them. We were inanimate objects to them. And we, despite all that, we made a way out of no way, as the black tradition says, and that's why I'm proud to be a black American.
Right. I'm with you, and my heart goes out to the very same feelings. We have a sister on the line, Sister STST.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I'm Sister STST. It stands for Sister Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired. And I'm from Black Talk Radio on another radio station. And we like to think we're interactive as well. But I had a question for Dr. Gates, which is, why shouldn't we see Encarta as a continued exploitation of African heritage by the highest bidder?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, one, because it is completely owned by black scholars. It's not, this encyclopedia is not owned by Microsoft. They're just the publisher. It is owned by Anthony Appiah, me, and Quincy Jones. I'm sure you wouldn't say that Quincy Jones is a capitalist.
So Quincy Jones, yourself, and Anthony Appiah were the only scholars that worked on the project, and you were all African scholars, black scholars?
No, Quincy Jones is black. I'm black. Anthony Appiah's uncle is the king of the Ashanti. Anthony Appiah is a Ghanaian. Wally Soyinka, you know who he is?
Yes, I certainly do.
Wally Soyinka was the chairman of the editorial board. He also was my professor at the University of Cambridge and the director of my dissertation. This is a black-owned, black-dominated project, without a doubt. But we needed a publisher. We couldn't publish it ourselves, so we went to the best CD-ROM publisher of encyclopedias in the world is Microsoft. I don't know if you've looked at their Encarta encyclopedia, but it's excellent.
It
and
is.
We used their technology and made our own encyclopedia. And they were great to work with. You know, black people don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, if I go buy a loaf of bread, it doesn't have to be made by a black company to taste good. But what I wanted to do was to use the technological advances perfected by Microsoft for our own purposes, and that's what we did. We didn't sell our content to anybody. It's owned by a company called Afropedia Limited Liability Company. It's got six partners, and I just named the major partners right there. An additional partner is an African man, a banker called Wale, W-A-L-E, Adun, E-D-U-N. And he's the fifth partner. And then the sixth partner is a white man who's one of Quincy Jones's good friends and partners. But it's ours, sister. It's ours. It's
well, I don't know if I can claim it like that.
Well, I don't care how you claim it. I'm telling you where it is. You can't sit in your living room and decide who owns my encyclopedia. I'm telling you. If you're asking me, I just told you.
Okay.
And now, if other groups of scholars had done it, they would have done a different encyclopedia. But that's just the way it is. And this is America. I mean, the more the merrier. I hope other people come out with their own encyclopedias, and that would be great.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate that. Okay, now, I have to ask, because we only have a few minutes left for the show, other than...
I can't wait to come back. I love to call in. I love doing battle. That's what a scholar does. So come on. Come strong and bad.
Well, I have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask as well. I wanted to get back to asking you some things about how you were able to capture the Pan-African civilization, you know, in two, and what happened in the U.S. history in two encyclopedias.
It's 2.25 million words. Think about that. You know how many words are on a piece of 8.5 by 11 typed paper, you know, typing paper?
Mm-hmm.
If you type out, you know, an essay, there are 250 words on one typed piece of paper.
Right.
Multiply, divide that into 2.25 million words. I mean, it's a huge
monumental encyclopedia.
Right. But I'm also, I think you and I both know that you could have done this with that many words just on the 25 dynasties alone.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right there. But it's the size of the Random House Encyclopedia or the Cambridge Encyclopedia of the whole world. But we're hoping to do a second edition, and we hope to add maybe another million words. And each time we do another edition, we'll add more and more. But the only way that we were able to do it was to, and that is the problem of editing any large-scale project. You got to come up with the table contents, then you have to assign word lengths to each of those articles, right?
Right.
So like Egypt, maybe it'd be 10,000 words, and slavery, maybe 10,000 words, but an article on Afrocentricity might be 1,000 words, or an article on Ken Reeves, the mayor, former mayor of Cambridge, might be 500 words. It's that kind of thing. You develop these formulas to parcel up the available space that you have. You can't do everything overnight. And one of the things that happens to our people is that we get paralyzed because we want to do it all instead of just doing as much as we can do. So we signed a contract that had a word length of 2 million words, and then we did more. We did 2.25 million words. But there's always more that we could do. And this is, given the resources that we had, we think we did as well as anybody could possibly do. And
are you kidding me? I've been out there looking, even for black clip art. Okay, something as simple, that would seemingly simple as black clip art. I've been out there looking for a long period of time on some comprehensive works, and you find a little bit here and a little bit there, but to be able to go to an encyclopedia on black history and culture and just be able to pull from such a broad range of things.
That's a miracle.
Yeah.
I think it's a miracle, and I was the one who was the cheerleader for this project for the last 25 years. I have been trying to do this project, ladies and gentlemen, for 25 years. I heard about the idea when I was an undergraduate at Yale, and I decided I wanted to try to do it. And I talked to Shoyinka and Appiah when we met at Cambridge University in 1973 into signing a pact, not signing a pact, we just made a covenant, a pact, that we were going to try to take Du Bois's original idea and bring it to fruition. And 25 years, almost to the day from the time that we met in October 1973, we finished this encyclopedia in November of 1998. Isn't that amazing?
It's absolutely phenomenal.
And you know what I did? I went to church at Memorial Church at Harvard. It has a black minister, one of my best friends, Peter Gomes. And he asked individual faculty members to give, they have chapel every day. And my name came up, so I went. I've done it about 3 or 4 times. And I went the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, or the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, something like that. And I stood up, and I told him the story of this encyclopedia. And I said, I came to church today to thank God for giving me this blessing to be able to bring to my people the truth of the complex truth of their past through this great encyclopedia. And I had tears in my eyes, and I think other people did too. The point is, I just wanted to thank God on this Sunday for letting me be an agent for our people to bring this project with my, I didn't do it by myself. I did it with 400 other people. But and I did it with my co-editor, my best friend, Anthony Appiah, and my other best friend, Cornel West, and several other people, here at Harvard, black people and white people. You don't have to be black in order to have insight about the black world.
Right.
That's ridiculous. But we did it with an international editorial board of 36 people plus 400 more scholars. And now your children and my children will always have access to this information through the convenience and ease of the CD-ROM.
Well, thank you. I have to cut you off. I apologize, but we've come to the edge of the show.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
I've enjoyed myself.
And I'm going to go, for more information, www.africana.com.
Yep, Africana.
Okay.
And Africa with an N-A on it.
And with an N-A on the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Dr. Gates can be reached. He's the director of the Du Bois Institute at Harvard University.
Right, drop me a line.
Drop him a line.
Drop
and I'll be
line.
Talking to you more.
Anytime.
Okay.
Thank you, sister.
Thank you. I'd like to thank those who made it possible. You, the audience, for listening. Our engineer, Alex. Producer, Harry. My name is Paula Robinson. You have been listening to In Unison. Stay tuned next for Jem and Joe Johnson.
If you'd like
like a copy of today's program, please write to In Unison Program, care of WILD, 90 Warren Street, Boston, Mass., 02119. Attention, Harry Behringer. Please include your return address and contact number. The In Unison Program is produced by Paula Robinson, assistant producer Harry Behringer, and engineer Alex Phillips.
WILD is celebrating its 50th anniversary.